This is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. We begin on the front page. Proposed solar farms in Ford and McLean counties. Solar projects eyed. Earthrise Energy moving ahead with solar farms in Ford and McLean counties. Gibson City. Earthrise Energy wants Ford County residents to understand its plan for the development of a proposed solar farm in the area. To that end, the natural gas plant operator headquartered in Arlington, Virginia, held an open house on Monday, April 8th at the Krause Center in Gibson City, where citizens could learn the details of the proposed 1,300-acre Gibson City Energy Center Solar 2 project. Earthrise Energy is developing two solar farms, one in Ford County and another in neighboring McLean County, both near Earthrise Energy's proposed Gibson City's Energy Center, a natural gas power peaker plant project developer Ellie Guinness said at the open house. The solar farms would have the advantage of being able to connect to the existing power transmission infrastructure at the peaker plant to be built at the Jordan Industrial Park in the west side of Gibson City, which would supply energy to the grid at peak times of electricity usage, Guinness said. Guinness said the Gibson City Energy Center Solar One project is in McLean County in Cheney's Grove Township, southeast of Saybrook, while Ford County's Solar Two project is in Drummer Township, about 1.5 miles northwest of Gibson City. The leases have already been negotiated and signed with landowners, Guinness said, with no eminent domain powers needed to be exercised. Earthrise Energy submitted its special use permit application to the McLean County Zoning Board of Appeals in March and plans to submit its special use permit application to the Ford County Zoning Board of Appeals shortly. Guinness said at the open house, then noted that Earthrise Energy plans to host another open house in Ford County at the end of May prior to a public hearing on its application for a special use permit in Ford County. It is important to hear from members of the local community, understand their concerns, and clear up any misconceptions they have about solar projects, and answer questions about the company, Guinness said in a follow-up email to the Ford County Chronicle. For example, one question we often hear is why we are building our project in this location. There are numerous factors considered when selecting a site, including avoiding wetlands and protected species habitats. Those factors weigh heavily on the land selected for the project. But another main consideration is proximity to our existing natural gas peaking plant, the Gibson City Energy Center. Due to the project's proximity to the plant, we can avoid building long transmission lines to connect the project to the grid. The solar farm in Ford County would generate constant output of 135 megawatts. The project also is expected to generate more than $23.9 million in property tax revenue for local taxing districts over its lifetime, including more than $16 million for local schools and more than $3.7 million for Ford County, according to data presented at the open house from the Bloomington-based consulting firm Strategic Economic Resources, SER. SER also reported that the project would create 36 local jobs during construction, plus 18 non-construction long-term jobs, generating $3.9 million in local earnings during the construction and $1.6 million in local earnings long-term. SER also said the project would generate $6.3 million in local economic output during construction, with $6.1 million more generated locally long-term. As for building permit fees paid to Ford County, fees of up to $10,000 per megawatt are charged by the county, capped at $250,000 per project. Also on the front page from Ford County, Russell named interim public health administrator. agency's emergency preparedness coordinator promoted to interim role to be offered a permanent job. Paxton. A week after its administrator unexpectedly resigned, Ford County Public Health Department already had named a replacement. The Board of Health approved the promotion of Seth Russell to the position of interim administrator on Tuesday, April 16, pending the Illinois Department of Public Health's approval. Then, on Friday, April 19, exactly 1 week after Donnie Gill resigned as administrator, effective immediately, the IDPH's director, Dr. Samir Vora, notified both Russell and the Board of Health's president, Mike Short, Verl Paxton, that the IDPH had reviewed Russell's qualifications and approved him for the position of public health administrator. Short said the IDPH's approval allows Russell, formerly the Health Department's Emergency Preparedness Coordinator, to fill the administrator's role on not just an interim basis, but on a more permanent basis too, if Russell so desires. If all goes as planned, the Board of Health will consider removing Russell's interim tag at its next regularly scheduled meeting at 6 p.m. Tuesday, July 16th at the Gibson Area Hospital Community Education Center in Gibson City. "He's really sharp. The guy's incredibly smart," Short said of Russell on Wednesday, April 18th. "I think Seth will do a great job. He's very detail-oriented and willing to help in any way he can. Guy just has the qualities to be a good leader." Russell, who is 36, a Southern Illinois native now living in Rantoul, has been working for the health department since November as its emergency preparedness coordinator. Russell, who has a master's degree in public administration from Southern Illinois University at Carbondale and previously worked for the Federal Management Agency and for a Native American tribe, said Friday that he loves his new role as interim public health administrator and feels prepared for his new responsibilities. Whether Russell is offered and accepts the job on a more permanent basis remains to be seen. Both Russell and the Board of Health want to first make sure that they all agree it is the right fit over the next several weeks. "We want to give him time to be sure this is what he wants and to do, since it wasn't originally a goal of his," Short said. "I want to make sure that the board is fully satisfied with anything I'm doing, and I want to give them every bit of opportunity to make sure of that. If they want to move forward with me, it's an informed decision they will make," Russell said. Russell's predecessor, Gill, had only a brief stint as administrator, having began his employment with the agency on September 25th as a replacement for Lana Sample, who had served as administrator for 9+ years prior to her September 1st resignation and moved from Paxton to Florida. Gill's resignation letter, dated April 12th, and addressed to the Board of Health, was brief as well, being just 2 sentences long. "I would like to regretfully inform the board that, due to unforeseen personal circumstances, I am resigning as administrator of the Ford County Public Health Department," Gill wrote. "I thank you for the opportunity, and I wish you all the best moving forward." Short said Gill's resignation, which was affirmed by a unanimous vote of the Board of Health on April 16th, was nothing we had really expected. Gill did not immediately respond to a text message from the Chronicle requesting comment. Short noted that Gill, in his short time with the health department, was able to hire some good employees, including Russell, an incredibly good hire, it sure looks like, Short noted, and Catherine Pizzell, who recently started working as the agency's community ed educator. Short said the agency continues to be at full staff, with the exception of having no emergency preparedness coordinator, although Short noted that Russell continues to fill that role while also serving as interim administrator. The agency staff currently totals 11. "He told us that on an interim basis, he could continue to do both jobs," Short said. As emergency preparedness coordinator, Russell provided guidance and assistance with other aspects of the health department's operation outside the realm of his assigned duties, Short noted, including helping develop a plan of the agency's a draft of the agency's new I plan, which outlines the agency's community health-related goals for the next 5 years. If not all of it, Seth did virtually all of the I plan, Short said. Russell presented the draft of the new I plan to the Board of Health on April 16th before the 8-member board voted 7-0, with board member Debbie Smith of Paxton absent, to approve his promotion, as well as an increase in his base salary of $50,000 as emergency preparedness coordinator to $65,000 as interim administrator. Turning to page 2, we have from the Gibson City Council, City Hall's leaking roof to be repaired this week. Meanwhile, legal action being considered to recover damages from Rupert. Gibson City. Summit-based roofing company's botched roofing job at Gibson City Hall will be corrected by a different company this week as the city considers potential legal action to recover damages. During a special meeting Wednesday, April 17th at the Moyer District Library, which has become the temporary setting for city council meetings due to City Hall's leaking roof, the council voted unanimously to approve an ordinance authorizing a $141,920 contract with Urbana-based Bash Pepper Roofing Company to install a new roof at City Hall. Mayor Dan Dickey said Monday the work would be done starting this week. Bash Pepper Roofing owner Ford Schroeder told the council last week that the job should take around 6 days to complete, but would be weather dependent. Bash Pepper Roofing's ability to begin the work almost immediately was among the reasons the council members agreed to accept the firm's bid of a slightly lower bid of $141,157 from Villa Grove-based Popjoy Roofing, which said it could not start the work for 6 to 8 weeks. The two companies were the only bidders. No representative of Popejoy Roofing was present at last week's special meeting. Superintendent of Water Streets and Alleys, Tyler Martin, and said the city solicited bids under two separate bid packages with the assistance of the Farnsworth Group engineering firm of Champaign. One bid package was to fix the roof above the city hall only, while the second was to replace the roofs of City Hall and the adjoining parking garage and police department headquarters. The engineers looked over these two bids and put their 2 cents into what they thought was missing so we could be better protected this go-around. While the bids were being considered last week were for the replacement of City Hall's roof only, Alderman Dennis Fisher said all of the roofs need to be replaced. Fisher asked why the bids for all three roofs were not being considered, especially since Mahomet-based Copper Creek contractors, which installed the now leaking roof in 2022, had done the entire job for one price. In response, Martin said the cost would be prohibitive, noting that only City Hall's roof is leaking at the moment. I looked at this as an availability of funds thing, Martin said. We are talking about almost $500,000 to repair all three roofs. We weren't ready for that expense. The leaks aren't damaging the cop shop or the parking garage. I would say for this evening, we need to focus on City Hall. Our insurance company is taking care of the leaking right now. Bash Pepper's Roofing's Schroeder supported Martin's conclusion, saying he believed that the other roofs on the complex would last another year. If it becomes a problem on the other one, Schroeder added, we will get you in and get it done. Dickey recommended the council consider the bids for repairs to City Hall's roof only and wait to work on the garage and police department roofs. Meanwhile, Alderman Sarah Sarantakos said she was concerned that fixing the roofs one by one would negatively impact the legal actions being considered to cover insurance claims for the previous botched roofing job. How would we get reimbursed for all of them if we are limited to one a year, Sarantakos asked. City Attorney Mark Miller responded, our obligation is to mitigate damages. We need to do as much as we can afford. Any problems we are dealing with are pre-existing, so I don't think it will have an impact. The ordinance authorizing the contract with Bash Pepper Roofing was reviewed by Miller, who said it closes some of the loopholes that were evident in Copper Creek's construction contract that resulted in the issues facing the city today. The ordinance is more detailed, Miller said, and contains some extra language to allow the mayor to sign off on the contract. If you pass this ordinance, Miller told Alderman, we want to make sure that what we end up doing is okay with our engineers and our special legal counsel. So when you approve the ordinance, you are approving the contract and also giving flexibility to the mayor to get some extra things clarified. Meaning, if we are being promised a warranty, the contract specifies what it is. Prior contracts in the past haven't been as tight as we would have liked them. The roof being replaced on City Hall was installed in 2022 by Copper Creek Contractors, owned by Jeremy James. According to the council minutes of August 20, 2022, James recommended a complete tear-off of the roof, City Hall, the garage, and the police department, and to install new roofing material for a cost of $360,000. The work came with a 35-year warranty. The city's originally budgeted $175,000 for the project and later voted to pay for it using revenue from its downtown tax increment financing district. Because of the need to tear out all of the materials installed by Copper Creek Contractors, in addition to repairing interior damage caused by leaks, the roof's replacement is particularly costly. The project was also unexpected and not in the city's budget, so it might require the use of emergency funds to cover the cost. Alderman Randy Wyon asked Schroeder if payment of the entire amount would be due up front. No, not at all, Schroeder told Wyon. Sympathetic to the city's budget issue, Schroeder offered flexible payment options at the meetings to help reduce the financial burden if needed. A native of Gibson City, Schroeder said he feels he has a personal stake in helping his hometown with the problem. I take ownership of this one. Whatever I can do to help, Schroeder said. I take this extremely personally. I have told multiple clients that if Gibson City Jobs pops up, it comes first. Whatever you guys need financially to make this work, we will help. Schroeder said he was shocked by what he found when he inspected City Hall's roof, which has a flat roof design. What I saw when I came was an absolute train wreck, Schroeder said. I have no other way of describing it. I can put a flat roof on anything, except for one thing, and that is spray foam. I call it pop. That is what is on your roof right now. That will void every single warranty that touches it. Nothing sticks to it, and it has a fume that comes out forever. Nothing can go on top. You can have an asbestos-filled roof with pitch and tar and everything else that's bad in the world, and I can walk up and put a warrantied roof on top of it. But I can't on this one. It is my devil. It is a nightmare. I just dealt with it on a job in Rantoul. On top of that, all the details were done wrong. And the real killer is, you can spray this foam continually, everywhere. And that's what's good about it. But they just went to the wall and stopped. They didn't cover the old flashing and did nothing to solve the problem of water running under it. The spray foam requires removal with hand tools, Schroeder said. Schroeder said the roofing job he was proposing, which will involve using sturdier materials and techniques designed to protect the roof over time, would prevent future problems. Following the Farnsworth Group's bid specification, Schroeder said his company will install a new roof with R30 installation, install a stacked wood wall to protect the edges of the roof, and used 3/4 inch rubber horse mats, a sturdy footing used for horse stalls, to increase the roof's strength, among other improvements. Schroeder said he plans to construct the roof so it has a Class 4 impact rating, the highest rating available, which will protect up to golf ball size hail. Tacos asked about whether the new roof would be able to withstand ice falling off the clock tower above the city hall and onto the roof, which has been a problem in the past. I have dealt with this before, Schroeder told Tacos. After we put the cover board on the whole thing, we will put a TPO membrane on top of it. In layman's term, a sheet of white rubber that allows us to weld all the joints together. The seams will be stronger because they are welded. Think of it as black rubber, but it's thicker and better in every way. Schroeder also noted that the city will be getting the maximum thickness of the TPO membrane, an upgrade that will make the roof more impervious to damage. The job will have an impact on 8th Street downtown. During the spray foam removal process, Schroeder said, he anticipates a large amount of tiny pieces of foam blowing off the roof and into neighboring areas and structures. Tarantego said she was concerned about the noise intrusion for those working in City Hall and their neighbors. However, unless there is mold or some other problem that makes City Hall uninhabitable, plans to move equipment and files were deemed impractical and cost prohibitive by City Clerk Jan Hall and the mayor, who plan on stay put in their offices during the roofing process. Meanwhile, council did not see the need to go into executive session to discuss possible litigation related to the roofing damages, the only other item listed on the special meeting's published agenda. James has repeatedly promised to get the roof repaired, but has not done so. In February, James admitted to the council that the roof installation was faulty and that he was not happy or proud of his work. James noted that the job used an experimental spray foam technology, which he had invested personally, but did not perform as expected. James did not immediately respond to repeated messages left at Copper Creek Contractor's office last week requesting comment for this story. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, April 24th. Joanne Allen, Bales Lake. Joanne Allen, 93, of Bales Lake, died Friday, April 19th. Private graveside services will be at Lyman Cemetery in Roberts. Memorials may be made to the Paxton First United Methodist Church or Governor Thomas Ford Chapter of the National Society Daughters of the American Revolution. Stanley E. Brucker, Gibson City. Stanley Eugene Brucker, 61, a native of Gibson City, died Thursday, March 21st. A graveside service will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, December 27th at Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Arthur R. Combest, Rantoul. Arthur Ray Art Combest, 87, of Rantoul, died at 5:30 a.m. Tuesday, April 16th, at the Autumn Leaves in Savoy. Funeral services were held at 11:30 Friday, April 26th, at the Maranatha Baptist Church in Rantoul, with the Reverend Mark Wilkerson officiating, and followed by burial at the Maplewood Cemetery on North Century Drive in Rantoul. Memorials may be made to the Rantoul Paxton, VFW. Shirley Ann Dean, Gibson City. Shirley Ann Dean, 95, of Gibson City, formerly of Foosland, died Sunday, April 7th at the Gibson Area Hospital Annex. Funeral services were held Friday, April 12th at the Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City, with private family burial was at Mount Hope Cemetery in Foosland. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be made to the St. John's Lutheran School in Buckley or the Bellflower Methodist Church. Amber N. Geraltz, Loda. Amber Nicole Geraltz, 35, of Loda, died Sunday, April 14th. A service to honor her and celebrate her life will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 27th at Maranatha Baptist Church in Rantoul. Lunch will follow the services. Ellen Harris, Paxton. Ellen Harris, 95, of Paxton, died at 6 p.m. Tuesday, April 17th at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton on Pells. Visitation was from noon to 2 p.m. Saturday, April 20th at Bear Family Funeral Services in Paxton. Burial followed in Maplewood Cemetery, Rantoul, with the Reverend Kevin Little officiating. Memorials may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital or the Parkinson's Foundation. Norma A. Hoffer, H-O-F-E-R, Buckley. Norma Arlene Hoffer, 90, of Buckley, died at 3:27 a.m. Monday, April 22nd at Country Healthcare in Gifford. Funeral services will be at noon Saturday, April 27th at St. John's Lutheran Church in Buckley with the Reverend J. Kevin Wyckoff officiating. Burial will follow in St. John's Cemetery, Buckley. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon on Saturday at the church. Memorials may be made to St. John's Lutheran School or church. Edgar E. Johnson, Cisna Park. Edward E. Johnson, 85, of Cisna Park, died Tuesday, April 16th at Accolade Healthcare of Savoy. Funeral services were held Monday, April 22nd at the Trinity Lutheran Church in Cisna Park with the Reverend Dale Fjordbotten officiating. Burial followed at the Trinity Lutheran Cemetery in Cisna Park with graveside military rites by the Cisna American Legion Post number 527. Memorials may be given to the Elevator Fund at Trinity Lutheran Church in Cisna Park. Josephine Soltysiak, and that is spelled Soltysiak, Mokena. Josephine D. Soltysiak, 97, of Mokena, mother of two Loder residents, died Wednesday, April 17th at Faith Place in Danforth. A funeral mass will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, April 29th at the St. Peter's Catholic Church in Clifton with Father Michael Powell officiating. Burial will follow at the Resurrection Cemetery in Justice. Visitation will be from 1 to 6 p.m. Sunday, April 28th at the Knapp Funeral Home in Clifton. Memorials may be given to Bartlett Learning Center in Wheaton or St. Luke Catholic Church in Salyersville, Kentucky. Hazel J. Walder, Hoopston. Hazel Jalay Walder, 4 months and 1 day old, of Hoopston, died Monday, April 15th at Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago. Private funeral services were held. Returning to the news with a positive article, Ford Iroquois 4-H Foundation. 4-Hers awarded $1,000 scholarships. Woodworth. A dozen college-bound high school seniors with 4-H program experience have each been awarded a $1,000 scholarship from the Ford Iroquois 4-H Foundation. To receive the scholarship, they had to be a 4-H member for the last 5 years, be a current member of a 4-H club in either Ford or Iroquois counties, have exhibited at the 2023 4-H show, and be graduating from high school and entering a four-year college, junior college, or trade school. The award will be presented upon the successful completion of their first year of college. The recipients were Rin Boundy, a member of the Prairie Fire 4-H Club, Catherine Westland, a member of the Prairie Champions 4-H Club, Anna Anderson, a member of the Fountain Creek Stitch Ndu 4-H Club, Wayne Eisenman, a member of the Fountain Creek 4-H Producers, Morgan Sin, a member of the Fountain Creek 4-H Producers, Grace Vance, a member of the Prairie Champions 4-H Club, Aubrey Wagner, a member of the County Kickers 4-H Club, Tatum Willems, a member of the Crescent City Barn Bangers 4-H Club, Esquerdo, a member of the Danforth Blue Ribbon 4-H Club, Rika Ritzma, a member of the Crescent City Barn Bangers 4-H Club, Samuel Munsterman, a member of the Danforth Blue Ribbon 4-H Club, and Lena Hohulin, a member of the Fountain Creek Club. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.